Hey everyone, welcome back to Citywide Blackout, your home for music, movies, and more. I'm your host, Max Bowen. In 2016, Lamar Letts was a finance major at Northeastern University in Boston when a career-ending injury led him to lay the foundation for the vitamin drink Hylux. In this episode, Lamar talks about the company's early days. He shares some of the advice his parents had and the lessons learned while navigating the complicated world of business. Lamar also talks about the last year and how the pandemic forced a change in his business plan. My next guest is the founder and CEO of Hylux, a vitamin drink launched in 2016, available in several stores and online on Amazon. Lamar Letts joins me. Lamar, welcome to the show, man. It is great to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
All right. You know, I want to start with your decision to launch your own business. At the time that you started this, you were still a student at Northeastern University in Boston. You have a degree in finance, but I know that you were also pursuing a career in track while you were at the school. So my question to you is, was this always your intention to go into business for yourself?
So I was always interested in business, but I never really could put my finger on what avenue that desire would manifest in. So it was always something in the back of my mind, but never something that I really, you know, from elementary school or something set out and thought, you know, this is my mission. When it came to the drink itself, I kind of fell into it, so to speak, in the sense that I was doing track and, I got a heart injury, which put me out. And thankfully, I made a full recovery. But when I was getting back into nutrition and just fitness in general, I was realizing that, you know, I was watering down a lot of the sports drinks that were out there. And I was in forums. I was reading all sorts of stuff online of like what the perfect sports drink would be. And that's when the light bulb moment kind of came in my head of, you know, I have these things that I would want, you know, like a certain amount of potassium, magnesium, all sorts. It was like, it's kind of nerdy in the sense that I was really digging through like these nutrition labels and trying to concoct this master beverage, so to speak. And, when I was in college at Northeastern, it was kind of like that crossroad where, why not give it a chance? You know, it's something that I myself will personally like, and I'm pretty sure that other people may like it too.
When it came to developing like the right formula, did you have to go through a lot of trial and error to kind of find one that like not only was healthy but also like tasted good?
Yeah, a lot of trial and error, and we were sometimes being on the cutting edge of food science isn't always the best place to be. You know, I kind of learned, just for the listeners, one of the main pieces or the cornerstone of all of this is that you have to work with a food scientist. You know, no matter what idea you have or anything, you know, you can't just throw it together and put it in the blender. You have to actually work with a food scientist. So when I found a food scientist, it was kind of like, you know, I was throwing them what I wanted, and we were trying to figure out just how can we give it a distinct taste and like the right combination of benefits and, you know, just something unique. And I definitely have to say there were some times when people would drink some of our first mixes, and they would kind of, you know, purse their lips a little bit like, healthy and, you know, not really the best response. Usually you want like a, wow, this tastes good. So trial and error, I got to see a lot of this firsthand. A lot of the times I would actually, hand it out to random people, not telling them that I created it or that it was, you know, a new drink in Boston. You know, just kind of really candid feedback. And then that's how I got a lot of the feedback to get it to where it is today.
What was some of the most memorable feedback you got, especially from handing the drink out to strangers?
Let's see. The most memorable feedback, I would say, well, one of the most memorable moments for me was we were selling it to a gym in Cambridge, actually, like one of those apartment, like complex, you know, those nice fancy ones. And just one time I was driving in Cambridge and I saw a guy walking to the gym drinking it. So I'll always remember that. I called my mom right away. I was like, someone's drinking it. I don't know him. So, you know, I'll always remember that as like, you know, those moments of where it's not necessarily feedback, but it's like action. But I'd say feedback wise, I guess it falls into two categories. You know, you have the category of taste and then the category of nutrition. And taste, always the best is, wow, this is good. Like, where can I get this? And then nutrition wise, I'll always remember just, you know, we were getting into fighters in UFC gym Boston and they were just like, oh, wow, you know, nothing out there is like this. And, you know, that always stuck with me of the fact that people, you know, fighters and athletes who were into reading nutrition labels recognized almost immediately that there wasn't really anything on the shelves like this with this nutrition profile. So that would really, you know, it's kind of made all the hard work and all those late nights, you know, researching nutrition labels, you know, it finally kind of came full circle.
What would you say were some of the bigger challenges for you, especially launching this thing still as a college student?
So definitely one of the biggest challenges was, I'd say there, you know, the general challenge of trying to juggle classes and this, and it really came down to like a very strict time management. And, you know, looking back, I don't really know how I was able to do some of this because I was waking up at like 6 a.m, walking out, and, you know, a lot of gyms open early. So I was like walking down Boylston Street and just pitching different gyms and, you know, and then going to class after. But the other piece, you know, something a little bit more, I guess, tangible, we ran into just problems that you would never expect when starting a business. You think it's going to be sunshines and then some hurdles along the way. But, you know, we actually got hit with a lawsuit by a large pharmaceutical company in Australia. Yeah, and they were saying that our name, you know, I can't say the name on the air, but they were saying that our old name was actually, it was a weird thing because they said it sounded too similar to theirs. So they were kind of pushing the boundaries and saying, you know, we're going to push our weight around. This little guy is not really going to fight it. And we couldn't really fight it. And that was, you know, a major, major hurdle because I was in a dorm room essentially. And I got this official looking email saying, stop what you're doing. So that was a tough one.
That must have been terrifying to see. Oh, we're potentially being sued. Fantastic.
Yeah. I called my mom. I was like, do we have a lawyer? Is there a lawyer that we know? And she's like, not a trademark lawyer. You know, so it was kind of in the big leagues and, you know, intellectual property lawyers are not cheap. So that was a tough one.
Yeah. I imagine there are so many like small things that you have to do. Like you have to get like incorporated or made like an LLC. You got to make sure the name is okay. You got to make sure the design is okay. There's like so many all these little things that you have to do to avoid things like, you know, getting sued or like losing money or things like that. Mm-hmm. Did you find someone that was a help with that? Someone who kind of could help you like navigate this world?
So actually, the biggest help were definitely my parents because they came to America from Jamaica, and one of the things that they got into was just business in general. And you know, they never really, I guess, forced upon me to be an entrepreneur or anything like that. But at the same time, I was just always around it. And I was always around that general influence of, you know, there's a process to things. But at the same time, if you want to do something and you want to go down a route, figure out the process. And I definitely was lucky to have parents who have, at least in some cases, gone down that route. You know, for me, it branched out a little bit because once it became like, you know, intellectual property lawyers and distribution and all sorts of crazy things with beverages, you know, that's where they kind of checked out. But a lot of the foundational work, a lot of the groundwork, they were huge, huge helps for me. Just even the emotional support aspect as well.
When you told them that you want to launch your own business, how do they react, especially with you still being in school?
So they were pretty supportive, and it was I got some really interesting advice from my mom, and I'm always going to remember this because it's one of those things where I always look at it and it's just true no matter what. And she told me that, you know, you should try it now because life is never going to get less complicated. And every year I look back at the year before and I'm like, wow, she was right about that. So, you know, she said that, you know, you can plan and plan and plan for this perfect time, but a lot of times you'll find out that there really is no perfect time. And sometimes you just got to figure out how to make the time now or do it now, or, you know, just really put your ideas in the present.
Moms are always right. Every single
yeah, and it's amazing because this is reoccurring advice every single year. Life never gets simpler.
She was definitely correct. Like, there's definitely times I think, huh, so I'm 40 now. Can I go back to being like 8, where the only thing I worried about was like what to watch on like TV?
Seriously,
man. All right, so you talked earlier about pitching this to people on the street, to gyms, to health clubs. I know that the pitch has to be perfect. It's such an essential part of what you do. How did you pitch this to people, especially where there's so many other similar drinks on the market?
Yeah, that's a really good question. One of the first things I learned was to, like, you know, you kind of have different pitches for where, you know, if it's a gym manager or like somebody who just looks like they're going on a jog or something like that. But I realized that you got to condense it down. You know, you got to get that elevator pitch. And I even had the, I guess, the rocket ship pitch, where it's like they're flying by in a rocket ship and you only have like half a second. The less sugar and calories than the leading competitor. I can't, definitely not going to go in and say their name on air, but I would say less sugar and calories than X, more vitamins and electrolytes than Y. And that was something where somebody was easily able to say, oh, all right, that's, you know, this is something that I understand. And this is how this new product compares to it. So that was something I always kept in the back of my, you know, my back pocket, essentially. But then also, you know, just the, I found that mixing in the story as well as a little bit of the why was really important for people as well.
Did you often put out there that you're from Boston? Did you find that kind of helped kind of sell the drink?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially even being a Northeastern student, people really, you know, they were really receptive to that. And that was really I really like that community aspect of it, where it was like, I don't know this person, but they're from Northeastern and let's give it a shot. So that was really cool to see. And, you know, it definitely, you know, those people took a chance, and it was really even they took more than a chance. They gave feedback. So they provided value and really helped me, you know, take those first steps.
So launching a business at such a young age, did you find that your youth kind of worked against you? Did you find people were a little dismissive because, oh, it's some kid, it's some like college student?
So yes, in some cases, and you know, there are some cases where it helps. Like a lot of times people will give you advice or give you, you know, set you up for opportunities because, you know, they see that you're working hard and young and really just trying to get on your way. But there are definitely those times where, you know, people were a little bit less receptive just because it was like, you don't really see too many younger people creating a food product or even just starting a business in general. So that was something that I guess one of the ways that I learned how to navigate that was definitely just taking a step back, refining my approach, and just making sure I check those boxes of, I guess, certification or just really give them reassurance and things like being able to say that I didn't make this in my living room. This is a you know, something that a food scientist helped me with. And it's just like I look at it in the sense that those people aren't coming from a bad place. They're just coming from a place of, all right, you need to kind of prove that, you know, this is completely, you know, legitimate, because a lot of people don't really think that, you know, if an 18-year-old opened up a restaurant, you know, they'd be like, what's going on over here?
Where did you make this?
Yeah, so I partnered with a so the food scientists were out in California. So the way that we refined a lot of the formulation was through mail. But then when we actually, you know, those are like the test batches. So that's like 10 bottles. But when you want to get like hundreds and thousands of bottles, that's when we had to partner with a company in New Jersey to actually make it. And that's when the kind of the rubber hits the road, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. How did you find the company in California?
A lot of calling, a lot of, you know, it's like people, older people will say yellow books, yellow pages. I was just on Google. So it was just a lot of that and a lot of cold calling. And inch by inch, phone call by phone call, I kind of learned, one, how to even start one of those phone calls. And then two, how to present yourself like you actually know what you're doing. And then three, how to actually progress that to a working relationship. So a lot of trial and error.
I'll bet. Now, did you find that what you learned at Northeastern like really helped, or were there more lessons learned during the whole process?
I would definitely say that the Northeastern education helped a lot. And one of the things, another mom piece of advice that I got, because there was a point when I was contemplating, you know, dropping out and, you know, pulling that entrepreneurship card just because I wanted more time to focus on the business. And it's something that you see in the news of this entrepreneur dropped out, that entrepreneur dropped out. But my mom kind of really gave me the perspective of, let's see, the best way she put it was that, you know, you may not realize the value of the education you're getting right now. But when you look back, you'll realize that what you're learning now has informed all of your decision-making, you know, up until that point. So I that really stuck with me, because then I started to really think about the classes I was taking and just even the professors and the mentors and things like that. I realized that, you know, I could drop out and kind of try and go it alone. But in this community, I was making better decisions because of the environment that I was in, because of the professors that I was around, even the student organizations, just, you know, having them taste a drink, say, hey, you should check this out, or you should, you know, go to this event. You know, that type of stuff seems minor, but it really adds up. And I have to credit that to changing the entire trajectory of this whole operation, because I would have been knocking on a lot of doors, and some of them would have been doors to nowhere if I had just dropped out and kind of went randomly by my own whim.
How did it change, like, the course of the business, the people you met and the folks that you worked with?
So I would just say one of the most important things was that it opened up my eyes to different, like, accelerators, different programs for startups. And then when you look into those programs, you look into how to get into those programs. And then those programs, you know, they have categories of, are you doing this? Are you, you know, what type of metrics? You start putting thought processes behind, you know, you start realizing what other businesses are doing, as well as what, like, let's say investors and startup accelerators are looking for. And, you know, I'd say it's almost like seeing the syllabus of the course and realizing where, what journey you're going to go on, as opposed to kind of like a self-study, you know, you kind of buy a textbook from Barnes and Noble and try and piece together your own framework.
It sounds like you got the chance to see how a lot of other business owners kind of ran their ships. Did this help you avoid any kind of pitfalls that you might have otherwise just kind of walked right into?
Yeah, I would definitely say it helped me avoid pitfalls of over, I guess this is a really important one for me, is overdeveloping the product. There's a common thing of the product you make, even the labels you make, like the packaging, it's never perfect. Once you print it or put it out there or get people to taste it, there's always one thing you could change, two things you could change. You know, maybe if we did that, people would like it more. Maybe if we added this flavor, and you can kind of get into this cycle of just really overdeveloping the product to the point where you're not going out and actually trying to sell it to people or, you know, get feedback or anything. You're just kind of you know, just thinking about the product. And, you know, you have to think about the product to a certain degree, but, it definitely reined that in for me of let's get results. Let's see how people actually like it right now.
Also, just kind of going back a bit, I imagine when you told your mom you're thinking of dropping out, she was out probably thinking, oh, hell no. Oh, hell no.
Yeah. She was a little bit, she was definitely gentler about it. But I definitely, now that I'm you know, graduated, I kind of see that if I pushed more, she probably would have pulled out the, oh, hell no. But yeah, she was definitely nudging, lovingly nudging me in the direction of continuing my degree.
Because I think especially for a business owner or anyone who kind of decides to steer their own ship, it's always good to have a plan B, because you just never know what's going to happen. Like a global shutdown, for example. No one saw that coming, and it's always good to have kind of like a backup. Did you ever hit that point where you were thinking, okay, this is just not working, it's time to do something else?
I'd say in the beginning, definitely yes, because there was this kind of chasm or hurdle, so to speak, where it was like I was getting it out there and people were liking the taste, they were liking the benefits, but then the problem was that it wasn't on store shelves. And then, you know, that kind of turned out to be a giant blockade of, okay, all right, how do I get it on store shelves now? And, you know, it's not easy to get on store shelves, or even setting up the online store, you know, just setting up a random online store and just putting out creating a new Facebook or a new Twitter and just putting it out there. You know, you kind of have to start from scratch. And when you start from zero and look at what is ahead of you, it definitely is daunting. And, you know, some of those first months of like, wow, we have zero traffic on this website. It was definitely daunting, just because it's like, we knew internally that like people like the product, but it just getting it out there was a whole separate aspect of the business itself. And I do have to credit Northeastern and just the communities that I was in, where you think that, you know, the product and that first hurdle of even getting the name, the trademark and everything, you finish that and you think the battle is done. But it's really off to the next battle of, all right, now get the word out there.
How did it feel when you first saw the stuff on store shelves?
Amazing. It was, I was like a fan. I was taking pictures. I probably looked like a fool in the cameras. taking pictures all different angles. And yeah, I loved seeing it. It was just, you know, it was just a great moment, because so much had gone into it. And it's funny, it's made me appreciate a lot of other, food products on the shelf, just because so much goes into the effort before you get it on the shelf. Like, I used to think that they just found the guy who was smart at food science and mixed it all together and you know, put it on the shelf and off they go. You often see the trucks down the street and you just see them rolling it into the store and you think, oh, it can't be too crazy. they're just putting it in a bottle and bringing it into the store. But, you know, it really gave me a perspective of how much goes into it.
Yeah. I imagine it's like one of those things where you're like, you see it being put on the shelf, something very simple, but to you, it's like all that hard work, all the doors shut in your face, all the folks who said, this is no good. It's like, no, it's good. It's there.
Yeah. that was really a big success moment, because it's, you would think that, you know, in an ideal world, if people like the product, then it's just easy to get on the shelves. But no, it's a whole separate battle entirely. You have to prove to the people who are in charge of the stores that, you know, they may have a different taste bud, or even they may like the taste, but they may say, then why will other people buy this? Why will other people take a chance on this? And you have to be ready for those questions of, you know, it's not just that it tastes good and that it's good for you. It's that we have a plan and we have a process for getting the word out and getting people, you know, on board with this new drink.
Let's talk about that, because I've seen that you're on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. But how do you market something like this? How do you kind of get the word out, especially where like so many of their folks are having their own like business pages? How do you make your stuff stand out?
So one of the things that we found really successful was, one, getting product shots of the product out there, because one, we have to show people that, hey, this exists. This isn't just a logo and like a 3D image. So that's important to add that element of realism to the page. But then also just getting it out to other people on Instagram has helped tremendously. Going to events, getting people, whether it's free samples or tastings, and just having them taste it, take a picture of it, put it on their story. It slowly but surely adds that element of, I like to say realism, just because there's so many things that you see on Instagram or Facebook or anywhere. It's like, wow, that's a really cool. I wonder if it exists. And it's like, oh no, it's future technology or in the future, coming soon. And even other things where it's like, oh no, we actually are only in Tokyo, or like, we only sell in Brazil or Singapore. But being able to really let a group of people know that, hey, this is a person in Florida, there's a person in California, there's a person in New York, and they're drinking it on the story. You know, I think that Instagram and Facebook are really cool in the sense that they allow you to just add that level of sophistication to your message. Whereas generally it's just, you know, kind of, hey, drink this. This exists. And now it's, wow, other people are drinking it. I wonder what that is. Hmm.
Now, when you post something, do you find yourself checking back to see the likes and the comments?
Sometimes, but interestingly enough, less as things go on. So when I first started, I was glued to it. And I was, you know, I remember the first time I set up the business, like Twitter and Instagram, I was going down like the hashtag hydration, and I was trying to say, hey, try this. And like, you know, I was really engaged in it. And I guess it also speaks to just another element of the business now, where as we finally brought on some team members to help with that. And I found that, you know, it's definitely best to take a step back and then focus on where I can have the most impact. So, you know, I definitely like the posts and everything like that, but I definitely have found myself saying it's good in their hands, you know, take a deep breath. But yeah, I'd definitely say in the back of my head, there is that more likes, let's get it. Like, because it's, the more people that like it, the more people have seen it, who have probably tasted it. And the great thing is that it's really exciting, because a lot of people who just I've never met, I've never seen before, but they've ordered on the site or on Amazon, they'll just comment saying, tastes great, love this flavor. And, you know, it's just a great start to your day when you see something like that. So I'm kind of always drawn back to the page.
I'll bet like every time you get those, like the 5-star reviews, like, yeah, all right, the day's awesome now.
Yeah, I'm a little biased, but you know, I'll go with what that guy said.
Exactly. Let's talk about the team. Who do you work with on this?
So I work with, I'd say the majority of my team is actually in Milwaukee. So we're a remote team. And then we work with some agencies that really help us out in different areas. But it's been, the team has formed through a really organic process, in the sense that it's been mentors who have opened us up to people who can help us in a certain capacity, maybe marketing, maybe sales. And then we speak to this person, they try the product, and they want to get on board and help in any way they can. And a lot of times that has organically transformed into them joining the team.
So you launched the business in 2016, and now currently it is available in several stores and on Amazon. Did you have a plan with every year of what you want to accomplish? And as a follow-up, if the plan didn't work, how did you adjust?
So yes, I definitely did have a plan of, and especially in the beginning of, and we touched on this a little bit in the beginning too, and I think it's important to bring back up, but a lot of those little logistical things that are easy to say, oh, you know, we'll get to that. That's not important. I made sure that those were really, you know, those were written down on a list and crossed out, you know, with a paper and pencil every single time they were done. So those were the kind of goals that you don't see on the surface, but they were being done. But then also the goals with, let's see where we can, you know, where we can get the product or type of exposure we can get. Every year we definitely had those goals, and, you know, completely candid, we definitely missed those goals some years, but it was going back to the drawing board and saying, all right, were we being realistic with those expectations? And, you know, yes or no. And if we were or weren't, how can we navigate it? Because you often learn something if you go for a goal and you don't make it, you learn something along the way. And a lot of times the learnings would allow us to pivot and kind of approach a different way. And I can get specific on this where, you know, let's, you know, the idea of let's get this drink into basketball and football stadiums, those large stadiums. And, you know, we kind of go down that route and we realize that those big stadiums have contracts with the largest beverage companies, two. If you know, it's generally one of the two that they have large contracts with. And that was kind of something that blocked us out. But from that, we kind of realized that there are a lot of smaller places that are quote unquote not worth the bigger guys' time, just in effort or reach, or just it's located somewhere where it's not a giant metropolis. So we kind of saw that there were opportunities elsewhere, and that it's really not feasible for one or two companies to really be in every single thing. Maybe they'll be in everything that's obvious, but there are a lot of non-obvious avenues that you can go down. So a lot of the learnings and the pivots were us running up against the wall when it's, you know, an obvious goal, but then learning that there are some, I don't want to say back doors, but side doors to different goals. And you obviously have to work harder for those because they're not those, you know, those airport destination cities, but a lot of times that's where you really prove the product.
I like that approach. I like that. So like plan A doesn't work. You say, okay, we'll get into this like smaller area. Won't be as big as Splash, but it's in there. So is it currently available in smaller arenas?
Not arenas, actually. So convenience stores, grocery stores, and then especially with the lockdowns and some of the, you know, how, you know, businesses were reopening, we found that's where we kind of found the lane of Amazon and the website really picking up. So in a sense, that was almost a pivot in itself, just because when things were closing down and, you know, you were calling on like grocery stores and convenience stores and even gas stations of, hey, you're going to be open? Or like, what is it looking like? Are you letting people inside even? Like some gas stations would just kind of, you know, do the window thing. But we found that pivot towards Amazon and that pivot towards the website, people, whereas they weren't really, you know, some people did it, but weren't really ordering groceries online before, now they were just really wide open to it. So, mm-hmm. You know, it's things like that as well.
Mm-hmm. So I definitely want to talk about the pandemic and how this impacted your business.
So I was in New York, actually, and I was I was kind of in the middle of going to central Massachusetts. And, you know, my sister actually, she still goes to Northeastern, but I was planning on, you know, visiting her, seeing the campus and everything. And it kind of, I guess it was a weird time because it was like things snowballed. So I don't know if you remember back then, but Harvard actually sent their students back home early. And yeah, I kind of, everyone, it was so early in the pandemic that everyone was looking at that as, why would they do that? That's weird. You know, Northeastern, BU, all the other schools, they didn't have that announcement. So I was kind of in that that planning phase of, all right, let's, you know, I plan on being in Massachusetts for a little bit. And then it kind of hit, and you know, Northeastern sent their students back home, and all the other schools sent their students back home. And I was kind of, in, you know, canceled all the travel that I was planning, but I was in this in this New York space where we kind of realized that the business is going to have to make some changes for sure.
Did you have to just drop like a bunch of plans, gotta pick up new ones?
Yeah, and one of the biggest ones, we were supposed to be in some like a network of public schools, and we still have the opportunity. As it was one of those, it was one of those where I was really banking on it because like our big break with getting into a public school system, and just that city's network of schools would just they completely shut things down or lowered things to a capacity of like 8%, 10%. And it just, it was the worst timing. But at the same time, we I'm definitely grateful that my family was able to stay healthy, on one end. And then two, it was also, I was in a position where I didn't have a storefront either. So it was, I definitely count my blessings on that. And that, I had a product that I could just mail out.
So where is the business at now? Is this your full-time job?
Yeah, so it's my full-time job now, and we've added a few members to the team. Right now, we are at the cusp of, it was kind of like the COVID kind of pivot that took us down a route of Amazon and the website. But because of that and because of the support, a lot of people really interested in the nutrition coming out of COVID, we found that now we're getting some retail opportunities with some of the bigger players that are open. And, a lot of times those independent grocery stores were closing. These are, some of the people that were in talks now. These are the ones that were, kind of chugging along, and they're really interested in the product just because of, how it's been able to really get out there in the last few months.
Mm-hmm. What are your plans for this year, especially where things are still kind of uncertain and we're not really certain exactly when everything goes back to normal?
Yeah, so definitely the plan that is top of mind is really focus on the digital side of things when it comes to Amazon and the website. I want to say is our largest priority, just because it's a great community that we've been able to build. It was something where we kind of went from not really looking at the website too much. It was in the background to, wow, this is, we have a group of people who are getting this, once a week, a couple times a month, and they're just really into this, and we're able to, communicate with them over email, over social media, and just really get that rolling. And it's been really cool to see that build out. But then also the plan is to, I guess, focus on some of these bigger retailers that, and be really specific on where, because geography is playing a huge role in like a lot of what we're seeing now. So, the caution side of things would definitely, making sure that precaution is up, but at the same time, navigating towards where it's the safest and makes the most sense for the business.
We're hoping that we are seeing the light at the end of the tunnel, but you just never know.
Yeah.
Does that make you at all a little like shy about making certain moves, not knowing what's going to come next?
I'd say not really, just in the sense that I'm lucky enough to be surrounded by very, very smart people who, they years of experience in just different aspects, whether it's retail, whether it's sales, all sorts of stuff. And just the adaptability is that I've been able to see with everyone on board has been huge. So in my thought process, we're moving forward, the train is moving forward. If some news comes up, there's always a separate route, and oftentimes it's the safer route. I like to think of it as there's no bad news, there's just reality, and we'll just go with it.
I like that. All right, Lamar, let's play like a hypothetical game here. Let's say you could go back and talk to yourself back in 2016. Just starting the business out, it's still largely a concept. What do you tell yourself?
That's a really tough one, and that's a really good question. Let's see. I wouldn't want to I wouldn't want to spoil some of the surprises of, you know, maybe I'll tell older or younger me, I guess, in that scenario, younger me about switching the name. That will be the first destination on the time machine. But I would say to be a little bit more, I'd say, direct and a little bit more, I don't think conscious is the right word, but assertive, but in a respectful way of what you're trying to do and where you're trying to go. Because I feel like a lot of times, especially, you know, just being younger and naive, you know, it's easy to get drawn in all sorts of directions that may not really make the most sense. Like, let's sell this drink on the moon. You know, Elon's going there soon. Let's set up a shop on the moon. And obviously I'm joking with that, but you know, you can kind of get the sense that some of the directions that I was getting drawn into were kind of really far out there, and it wasn't the best use of time. And just being, you know, internally, I just thinking back, I definitely knew, and you know, you kind of have that gut feeling of probably shouldn't be spending time on this, or, you know, I shouldn't be doing that. But, you know, you have that, what if, you know, at the same time though, what if you get the winning lottery ticket? A lot of times, you know, your time is better spent in where you know that it should be spent, and where you know that you can get value both out of your own time and out of the people around you's time.
I like that. It's been great talking to you. I really love the story, and definitely best of luck with whatever comes next. But before we go, where do folks go to learn more about Hilux? Either the website or on the socials.
Yeah. So you can go to drinkhilux.com. That's drink and then HYLUX.com. And then you have the socials on Instagram at drinkhilux. So same thing. We've kept it straight across the board. And then on Facebook at drinkhilux as well.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, Lamar, once again, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure speaking with you.
This is your girl, Lady V, host of The V-Line, and you're listening to Citywide Blackout.
All right, folks, that brings this episode to a close. You can follow the show on Facebook under Citywide Blackout and Twitter and Instagram under Citywide Max. Listen to the show on Podbean, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Amazon Music, and every Saturday at 10 p.m. on Boston Free Radio. As always, keep those ears open.